South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Well, I'm back on the air again after missing two shows due to the craziness that always happens when I hold an expat wisdom seminar down here in Latin America. In fact, with the one that just ended a few days ago, I was kind of stretched to the limit since we were unintentionally overbooked at the last minute. As you might know, I only allow 24 people on the seminar. This time I had 28. How'd that happen? Well, about 3 weeks before the event, when I got down to the last two or three seats, when I mentioned that on the show, suddenly a number of people dove in all at the same time. And I couldn't arbitrarily eliminate people that had paid already, so I just pulled the whole thing off the website so no one else could get in and decided I'd just have to work it out, which meant that at one of our boutique hotels, which only held 24 people, yours truly and part of the Expat Wisdom team stayed at another nearby hotel that night. So guess who was chopped liver that night? So anyway, last week I had 28 people drinking out of the fire hose again. And they got to see and hear things that, well, they'd just never get to see coming down on their own exploring or even hooking up with a travel agency. Yep, they saw the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. It's not enough to say you had to be there. You had to be with this particular group of people. In fact, as one of our attendees pointed out, he said that back home, he had maybe one or possibly two like-minded friends in his whole social circle that he could actually discuss this kind of stuff with without getting the glassy-eyed deer-in-the-headlight looks. Because after all, up in the States anyway, you're better off talking about sports and the Kardashians. The dumber the subject, the safer the topic, right? So basically, we had 28 very intelligent, like-minded people running around in the third world, off the tourist track, all bonding together in ways that for some would certainly make for lifelong friendships. So you might ask, with these folks, what subjects came up when they weren't drinking from the Expat Wisdom fire hose? Well, anything and everything, from naturopathic medicine to colloidal silver to personal safety and water filtration and organic farming, the labor market, IT and internet services, healthcare, schooling, and the usual suspects like the intrusion of Big Brother, the abusive agencies like the TSA, the IRS, the NSA, the Federal Reserve, the debasement of the currency, Obamacare, derivatives, and all those first world tipping points that are ready to flip. You know, the stuff that intelligent, like-minded people know and discuss all the time. The problem is, of course, how do you find people like that? Let me tell you, when you get 28 of those kind of folks in a room, including us in the Expat Wisdom team, the sparks and the ideas really fly. So half the fun and half the enjoyment of the whole seminar is meeting those like-minded people and hanging with them. So was it a success? Well, judging from the laughs and the smiles and the wide-eyed amazement, I know for a fact that no one went home disappointed. And the fact is, some of the people never did go home. They're still here. That happens all the time, by the way. And a few actually aren't going back at all. How do you like that? And most of the rest, they're making their plans. So sooner than later, they can get away too, so they can watch the world collapse, the first world that is, from a safe distance. Oh yeah, and one more thing. Here's another thing I kept hearing over and over again from the attendees, who were, by the way, coming up with so many brand new expat business ideas that I just couldn't keep track of them anymore. Anyway, people kept repeating to me over and over that they never would have come up with those ideas in a million years had they not experienced boots on the ground off the tourist trail. And I got to tell you that every time we sat down for lunch or dinner, someone would sneak over to me and say, "Johnny, I've got this great business idea." And then he or she would lay it on me, always followed by, "Promise you won't tell anyone, okay?" And of course, my answer always was, "Only if you cut me in for 20%. No, just kidding. You can trust me, my lips are sealed. I've got my own notebooks filled with business ideas that I'm never going to use. And that's just what'll happen to you once you've been down here a while. Like expat Eddie always says, the hardest thing about it is not starting the business itself, but deciding between all those great business ideas that pop into your head. And since startup costs are so cheap down here, a lot of expats don't end up with just one business, they end up with multiple ones. And that's why I always say, I don't care what kind of business ideas you got percolating in your brain up in Cleveland. You have to get your boots on the ground off the tourist trail to really ignite those little flashes of brilliance. And every single person in my seminar group now knows that for a fact. And by the way, when you're on the tourist trail like in Costa Rica or Panama, or Cozumel or Cancun or Playa del Carmen or any place a cruise ship lands, all you're going to see is what other gringos and expats did a long time ago to make their fortunes. And though here and there you can scratch out a business or buy a business out from another gringo, when you're on the tourist trail like that, your gringo advantage is long gone. Okay, enough said about that. Oh, and for all you guys and gals who couldn't come to this seminar, and I know there were plenty of you who tried to get in at the last minute and couldn't. Anyway, if you're wondering if I'm going to put on another one soon, well, we'll just have to wait and see because there's a number of factors involved, including the fact that your good old big brother up there is making it harder and harder for you to leave the States. But I don't have to tell you that. Oh, and by the way, if you're interested, we had people this time at the seminar who were born in 5 different countries, and one lady born in Puerto Rico. So these get-togethers always have a nice international flavor to them. And somehow, for every seminar I've had so far, a lone Canadian manages to slip in, eh? Now, getting off the topic of the seminar, though in a roundabout way related to it, I noticed that nearly everyone brought their smartphone down, and everyone was well connected, searching out those Wi-Fi hotspots in hotels and such. Anyway, one guy at the seminar had one of the most amazing apps I've ever seen. One afternoon, when we were getting off the vans to have lunch at a very cool coffee plantation, one of the attendees pulled me aside and said, "Hey, Johnny, have a look at this." And he held up his smartphone, which had the camera on, and he focused in on the sign in front of the restaurant that had the menu and some other details and explanations in Spanish, of course, because we were off the tourist trail. Anyway, he pointed the smartphone at the sign, and instantly, all the Spanish words were translated into English, and not just in any old lettering or color either. The translated words precisely matched the Spanish letter fonts and the color in the background, which was brown. Or maybe it was green. I can't remember. Anyway, it was really amazing to see it precisely translated like that without losing any of the color or the font or the letter size or the background. And of course, it doesn't take long, like a New York minute, to take these things for granted. And I'm sure you can see now how the language barrier is being broken down here in Latin America and just how easy it is to get around these days, even if you're well off the tourist trail. What with that app and GPS, you're never going to get lost, and you're always going to know what the street signs and promotions and banners say. Meaning, even if you have a swift case of Montezuma's revenge, you'll never need an extra pair of underwear because you'll always make that baño in time. We hope, but don't quote me on that, okay? 99 out of 100 times you'll make it on time, but there's less than a 50-50 shot there'll be toilet paper, so all bets are off there. And that's why I always advise greedy gringos and fresh expats to steal, or I should say grab, a handful of napkins at your last restaurant and stick them in your back pocket or your purse, ladies. That way you're ready for anything. And by the way, you use those paper napkins to open and close those filthy bathroom doors too, since often even nice restaurants have filthy bathrooms. If you've ever been down here on or off the tourist trail, you know what I'm talking about. Which reminds me, at one very nice artsy restaurant that the whole seminar group went to, one of our seminar guys sat down at the table, looked at me, laughed, and said he'd just gotten out of the restroom and noticed a paper napkin stuck to the doorknob. He said, "Johnny, that's your calling card, right?" I was busted. Yep, busted but sanitary. And you know, it was a nice restaurant, and I probably didn't need to do that. But you get into the habit, and down here, it's a great habit to have. Now, you might think me leaving a paper napkin stuck to the doorknob like that is a pretty low-class and crass thing to do. Well, you can think that, but I actually look at it as a lesson in sanitation for the next person grabbing that door handle. If they have half a brain, they'll wonder what the hell's going on and think, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. Or not. Can't change the world, you know, and this is Latin America. Oh, and by the way, the seminar guy who busted me on that, his name begins with an S. You know who you are. Now, as cool as that visual translation app is for that smartphone, I've got to mention that electronic translators of any kind are useful for a while, but they can be a terrible crutch. Meaning if you count on that stuff all the time, you're never really going to learn your Spanish. It's the same reason why so many gringos on the tourist trail, gringos who've been down for years, often don't learn their Spanish very well either. And by the way, I may have mentioned this before too, but people who come down here, gringos and expats, who take English teaching jobs, teaching rich kids at expensive bilingual schools, often, even after many years on the job, they barely learn even kitchen Spanish, too. That's enough to converse the basics with your cleaning lady. And why is that? Well, that's because they're hired to speak strictly English in the school, to teach the kids in English all the time, which is a great thing for the kids because then they get to learn American English right from the horse's mouth. Not like in the public schools where the English classes are taught by Latins who learn their English from a book, or they learn their English from another Latin English-speaking Spanish teacher. It's like making second, third, and fourth generation copies on a Xerox machine. You get the idea. It just doesn't work out very well. So, if you end up teaching at a high-end bilingual private school, even if you're well off the tourist trail, you might never quite learn proper Spanish. So, go ahead. Get all the translation apps and devices. They've come a long way with that stuff. They're great. But you're going to have to ditch them every once in a while if you really want to learn conversational Spanish. And speaking of copies, here's something that'll offend everyone. Because, you know, I am an equal opportunity offender. Now, I gotta admit, I rarely get hate mail. And though I get a lot of email, most people just kind of egg me on and say, "Go for it, Johnny, go for it. No one else is doing what you're doing out there." Meaning, I guess, giving out good information along with offending sensitive and PC-prone people. Some people don't want to hear the real truth about what's happening down here in Latin America. That is how gringos live, work, play, and do business down here. Sometimes I think people want me to give them the Habitat for Humanity version or the charity or Mormonized do-gooder version of what it's like for them to come down here for a few weeks and build soup kitchens, outhouses, and hand out bags of rice and condoms to the poor. But you see, the fact is, those kind of folks, the do-gooders, the ones that give away free things to the poor, always fail in the end. You can't just give poor people free things, hold hands, say kumbaya, and fly back to Philadelphia, and expect the free outhouses, computers, solar panels, and even condoms to stand the test of time. It seems that some people want the happy version, the synthetic Stepford Wife version of the expat files, and I just can't do that. So, until they cut the power on me, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. So for all you cowards out there who send nasty emails about me to the mothership station in New York saying things like, "You know, that deviant expat file guy, Johnny, with his so-called gringo advantage, is teaching people how to take advantage of poor, uneducated Latin folks, etc., etc." Well, here's what I've got to say about that. Come on down here and hire yourself a cleaning lady. And if you want to pay her $2,500 or more a month, about what full-time cleaning ladies will get in the States, be my guest. You can do that, but she'll be more than happy to take $250. And you know what? If you treat her like a human being, and the vast majority of gringos have those kind of values, you know, chances are she'll never, ever quit your employment voluntarily. Oh, and by the way, if you want, you can pay your dentist $1,400 for a root canal, too. But he'll be happy to take $200, you know? Regardless if you believe in root canals or not, that's not the point. So in the end, are we smart gringos and expats taking advantage of poor, uneducated Latin people? Well, that depends on how PC or hypersensitive you are. And in the end, like I've heard so many Latins tell me in so many words, they look at so-called wealthy gringos and expats, they think we all are, like a Latin American jobs program. Nothing wrong with that as far as we're concerned, but if you're really the sensitive PC type, looking to dissect everything out into black and white, then you gotta ask the question, who's taking advantage of who? Okay, where was I? Yeah, I was talking about copies, and that what I'm gonna say now is definitely gonna be un-PC. Now, of course, you've heard me say before that Latin America is the land of the pirates. And I don't mean as in the Tom Hanks movie, Captain Phillips, either. I'm talking about pirated watches and handbags and clothes and software, DVDs, video games, etc. In fact, pirated music CDs and movie DVDs are so prevalent that there's almost no market at all for buying that stuff retail at regular stores. In fact, I can prove it. You can go into a Walmart or a Costco down here, and chances are you will not even find a music or DVD section at all. Sure, they'll have a computer section with the kind of software you can't pirate, like, for example, antivirus stuff, etc. But all you really have to do is walk outside a block or two, There's always some pirate commerce going on, especially at corner gas stations. They seem to be favorite sites where little guys try to shag you down in your car while they hold giant stacks of CDs and DVDs. All 100% pirated, of course. And for the low, low price of a buck to a buck and a half a piece, with quantity discounts. So what that means is that every time you're invited over to someone's house to watch a movie, unless you're watching it on TV, you're watching a pirated movie, guaranteed. So now that you know this, naturally, you're going to jump up like an honest American and say, I'm not going to watch this pirated movie. That's underhanded, fraudulent, and illegal. Now that would be the correct thing to do for all you super sensitive PC folks out there, right? And while you're at it, why don't you dial 911? Well, down here, if you do, and someone actually answers the phone, you know when the Nicaraguan or Honduran police force is going to arrive? Try never, because at night, they're at home watching pirated movies too. Oh, and by the way, Blockbuster Video was down here in force, and it lasted a few years, but they too went bankrupt about a year ago, 2 or 3 years after they went bankrupt in the States. It's that lag time effect, you know? And what killed them, of course, was pirating. Now, you might legitimately ask, how did Blockbuster even survive a couple of years down here when all that pirating's going on? Well, that's an easy one. Blockbuster was simply the place to go for upscale Latins and gringo wannabes. That old gringo advantage again, you know? Just like Starbucks is the place to go now. Which meant, of course, their market was a very, very thin, narrow segment of society. And early on, Blockbuster's popularity was solely due to the gringo advantage and the fact that if you were an upscale Latin or gringo wannabe, you could belong to the Blockbuster Video Club, you know, where you could keep your DVDs past the due date and take advantage of weekend specials and stuff. But more importantly, you got a Blockbuster membership card you could flash around. Cool, huh? Just like it's apparently cool for upscale Latins and wannabes to walk around all day in the mall with their green Starbucks cup. But you see, when you could walk right outside Blockbuster Video and buy the very same DVD for a third or a quarter of the price, and own it, not rent it, well, when the Blockbuster novelty wore off, pirating finished them off. Oh, and by the way, the movie business down here, the cinema, is going great guns. All over Latin America in the medium and large cities, they're opening up Cineplexes and IMAXs like crazy. And the admission to a first-run movie is like $3 or $4. A little more for the IMAX. And yes, they have 3D and the glasses and all that crap too. But guess what? No $10 popcorn. Down here, that's also around $2 or $3. Expensive for the locals, but not for us. And by the way, when you go to a Cineplex, and these things are really first world, they'll have 4 or 5 all first world movies running. And for example, what's big right now is The Secret Life of Walter Mitty with Ben Stiller, of course. I'm sure most of you are aware of that. Or not. But here's something that most of you are not aware of. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty is a remake of a much better movie starring Danny Kaye and guess who, Boris Karloff. And it came out way back in 1947, and you wouldn't know that unless you were a classic film buff. Anyway, that just goes to show you how uninventive Hollywood is, huh? So why am I babbling about that movie, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty? I'll get to that in a second. Anyway, for a big budget movie like that, they'll run it at the Cineplex on 2 different screens. One in English with Spanish subtitles and another right next door dubbed in Spanish. So all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes, if going to the cinema is your thing, don't worry. You'll get it in English with Spanish subtitles, which is a pretty good way to pick up the language. Now, if you're a first world gringo expat who's still very tied in with what's happening up north, you'll know that down here too you can get Netflix. In fact, I know a handful of gringos who've got it. But even so, right next to that smart TV lies a stack of pirated DVDs picked up from those little vendors on the street. It's just inevitable, no matter how much you're against pirating, that those things will work their way into your house, believe me. Especially if you've got kids, a cleaning lady, or a friend or two who's really into cinema. Since those pirated versions are so cheap and most people only watch a movie once, they get passed around and given away like candy on Halloween. Now, for full disclosure, let me clue you in a little bit on just how this pirating DVD thing works. First of all, no one, I mean no one, gets busted for selling pirated DVDs, or pirated anything for that matter. Though occasionally you'll see a news item in one of the big newspapers that shows some warehouse full of pirated stuff on display for the news media and such, which is nothing more than a photo op for the police department or the mayor or the governor or whoever. But no one actually gets arrested for it, they just confiscate the stuff, or so it seems. Like one Latin lawyer told me, when politicians or the cops actually do need a photo op like that to prove to the first world that they're serious about cracking down on those impossible-to-enforce violations of intellectual property rights, etc., etc. It's a prerequisite to get more first-world grant money from stupid, corrupt first-world governments, who in turn enrich corrupt third-world politicians, and they're corrupt to the core third-world governments too. So what happens when there is that infrequent bust? Well, the perpetrators on site get walked to the police station in handcuffs. They pay a fine, maybe $300, get a court date, show up in court like 6 months later, get a jail sentence for around 6 months, and because pirating is not a violent crime, but a civil crime, they can pay around $2 a day to ameliorate their sentence. And with 6 months being 180 days at $2 a day, well, you figure it out. It's $360. Total time spent in custody? About 4 hours. And that, my friends, is how the supply side of pirating works down here. So what about the stuff the cops confiscate? The pirated stuff, the DVDs, clothes, and Gucci bags and stuff, end up in a police warehouse somewhere, and eventually filter out on the street again when all's been forgotten and no one's looking. Though I have to admit, once when I was in Panama, I saw a pirated goods warehouse photo op where there were a few thousand DVDs on the street and a bulldozer was smashing them. And like expat Eddie said at the time, with any luck, they were mostly reggaeton and Latin rock discs. And speaking of expat Eddie, now there's a guy who knows the DVD business down here. He must have like 2,000 DVDs at the main house and another 1,000 or so at the beach house. And yes, they're pirated. What else? And again, I'm not advocating here that anyone go out and buy pirated items. Just know that nothing down here in Latin America is black and white. What I'm explaining here is how expats live, work, play, and or do business down here in Latin America, including how they buy pirated DVDs. They do it all the time. So, wouldn't you like to know about that too? Now, take expat Eddie. He says he just doesn't buy any old DVD from any little kid on the corner selling the stuff. He'll pull up at a gas station where all these little guys hang out, and three or four of them will run up to his car and hand him big stacks of DVDs. Now, like Eddie freely admits, he's been burned before, with DVDs that have really bad soundtracks or fuzzy, indistinct video. Like he says, one day you'll buy a video from a kid, and the movie will be absolute cinema quality. And the next day, if you buy another one from the same guy, you'll get a piece of crap. With pirates, you get no quality control. What do you expect? But every last one of these guys selling those things will give you a guarantee. If the video's crap, you can come back the next day or whenever and trade it for another. Hopefully not another crappy one either. Hey, what they're doing might be illegal, but they want to keep the customer happy too, and selling a crap product is bad for business, you know? So anyway, like Eddie says, a year or so ago, he figured out a way to get absolute cinema-quality videos every single time. And how did he do that? Well, as he shuffles and sorts through the videos that are for sale, he looks very carefully for the word screener, or the letters SCR, which stand for screener, on the label that's printed on the DVD. Now, of course, pirated DVDs do not come with packaging. They just come slipped in a little plastic envelope. But they all have a nice, full-color printed label on the front, just like the original would have, though most times translated into Spanish. But no box to go along. So anyway, what's that screener thing all about? Or the letters SCR. Now that lettering is usually very small. Sometimes you can barely read it, especially if the DVD label isn't printed in high quality, which they often aren't. Well, here's the dope on that screener thing. Now there are 6,000 members, that's 6,000 members, of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. You know, the folks that vote on and give out the Academy Awards every year. Now, these 6,000 members are allowed to vote in every category of the Academy Awards. But to see the movies, the ones that are up for nomination for awards, they're sent DVDs that are called screeners, which they get generally about 2 months before the movie hits the theaters. And what makes these screeners different from regular DVDs that you and I might rent is that every so often, as you're watching the movie, it'll say at the bottom somewhere, this DVD is for Academy Award screening purposes only, thus the word screener. And it goes on to give a warning saying something like, you're responsible for this screener, and there's a personal watermark built into this screener that identifies you as the Academy member recipient of this DVD, and it's not to end up in anyone else's hands. Not only that, at the very beginning of the DVD, when you first start it up, it says again that the screener has an individual watermark that's been assigned to you, and that it's your responsibility not to let that DVD get out in the hands of anyone else, nor is it to be copied or viewed by anyone but the Academy member. Okay, so far so good. Now, of course, I have to mention that every single gringo and long-term expat have seen these videos pop up everywhere. Not only do most Latins and expat gringos have them in their houses, but when you're in a bank, hospital, or doctor waiting room or insurance office, often there'll be a movie playing in the waiting area, and yes, it'll be a pirated screener. In fact, even airlines and big international bus lines that connect every big city in Latin America, even the nicest luxury buses with bathrooms and sleepers, show these pirated DVD screeners. Though I admit they're not always screeners, because sometimes the quality's pretty crappy. By the way, I'm just mentioning this to show you how really widespread and accepted the whole pirate thing is. Now, when we expats talk about this kind of stuff, we're always wondering how one of those precious Academy Awards screeners slips into the dark underworld of pirating. Because you see, if those things are all personally watermarked to the individual, it should be no problem to trace it back to the original owner. And why would the original owner let that screener DVD go even before the movie shows up on the big screen? Because that's what happens all the time. Down here in Latin America, we get movies before you up in the States even get to see them. Obviously, it's for the money, since not all 6,000 Academy members have George Clooney's or Harrison Ford's money. In fact, I've heard that only about 35% of all the Academy members have steady jobs. But back to the hit movie, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the inferior remake starring Ben Stiller. Guess what? One mystery was solved a few weeks ago when watching that movie at expat Eddie's house. And as the film started, the usual disclaimer came up. It said, "This DVD is for Academy screening purposes only and is impregnated with a unique watermark, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah." And then an unbelievable thing happened. For the first time in my life, and in Eddie's life too, a funky little watermark appeared, and it said, as plain as day, "Property of Academy member Ellen DeGeneres," followed by the date November 26, 2013, which I assume was the date she got the thing, because that's before it came out in the theaters. Now, I doubt she needs the money, or she'd risk getting in trouble with the Academy by letting that thing go. Eddie's hypothesis is that she just might have a Salvadorian maid or housekeeper who did need the extra cash. Coincidentally, of course, Eddie lives in Salvador, and that's where he buys his DVDs.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.